IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. Joe Biden is going to become America's 46th president in about a week from when we're recording this. And I've got Manoj with me today, and we're trying to figure out what this new administration's foreign policy team might mean, both for India, but also for the wider region. And I'll start, of course, by, you know, just mentioning that Joe Biden himself is not a noob at foreign policies. He's a veteran of the subject. He was a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for a long time. And back in the 1990s, when India-US relations were often troubled, he was considered one of those senators who were more friendly towards India. And in 2001 to 2003, he became chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And once again, in 2007 to 2009. Though, of course, by 2008, he was quite busy with, campaigning with Obama. And I can tell you he was frequently away from important meetings. But anyway, just to step back from that, you know, what I think we might be able to see from this new administration is a return to a sort of professionalism and more predictability and competence. But there have also been some concerns in India and also in other countries in Asia about what how Joe Biden's administration sees the region and what its priorities really are. So Manoj, I'll just start by asking you, what are some of the big, most obvious changes that we're going to see once Joe Biden comes to power on the 20th of January?
Hey, thanks, Aditya. I think the first thing that I want to begin with to say is that, and I say this with all sense of, humility, that in India, we believe, and rightfully so, that our most important relationship is with America. Yet there is very little energy and time spent on understanding America. A lot of us sort of presume knowledge on America, and there is very little research that actually goes in as much as the time that we spend on, say, understanding Pakistan or understanding China. So this is me sort of knocking a little bit of my own trade, but being honest, I think we need to, in India, also look to spend much more time on studying America, because we tend to rely a lot on what the Americans are saying about themselves often, which is great because there's tremendous transparency there, but there's much more need in India to do that. With that said, let's just look at what exactly we've learned so far. Soon after Joe Biden got elected, in his victory speech that he gave, on that Saturday after the election on Tuesday, this was one of the things that he said, right? He said, I sought this office to restore the soul of America, to rebuild the backbone of this nation, the middle class, and to make America respected around the world again, and to unite us here at home. Now, in this sort of, you capture all the key objectives that he's outlined, right? I mean, it's the idea is that there's tremendous turmoil domestically, which is going to impinge on America, which we saw on Capitol Hill, a couple of days ago. The economy is not in the best of shapes, particularly because of COVID. And that's the one thing that he needs to focus on. And the idea that he needs to make America respected around the world, again, is an acknowledgement of how the U.S. has sort of been knocked off the pedestal that it was, and how power dynamics are also changing around the world. And I think those are the kind of things. And within that business of being respected around the world is the idea of, talking to partners and allies much more. And that's sort of the starting difference in terms of foreign policy approach with compared to Trump. You know, Trump was talking about America first, and Joe Biden is not really talking about that. So that's probably one stylistic thing that we will see change, which is in how the U.S. engages with partners and allies and even rivals and potential adversaries than how Trump did. In terms of substance, we're still to see as the sort of team gets inaugurated and, Senate confirmations happen, and then they get down to the business of diplomacy. But what we know at the moment is this, right? He's got certain nominees. He's got, most importantly, Antony Blinken. He's got Jake Sullivan as the national security advisor. And these are your two big nominations. There's also John Kerry, who's essentially, officer on special duty, looking at climate change. And there's going to be these guys are going to work together, but there's also going to be places where their roles will create conflict, and we'll have to see how that gets managed. But at least to begin with, what we know is that compared to Donald Trump's administration, which is where the State Department was essentially not just terribly understaffed, but also there was some sort of a purge that took place, partly with people leaving because they did not agree with how the president was running things, but also partly with Trump's sort of concerns and, you know, accusations with regard to the deep state within the American state, which is trying to scuttle his agenda, sort of leading to a lot of people getting shafted. And I think that's the one thing that we need to see change. I mean, I was looking at figures, and what you can see, and we'll share this in the show notes, that in the Department of State itself, in January last year, there were at least 88 jobs across the Department of Defense, Department of State, and Department of Homeland Security, which were not filled. And these were key jobs, like senior positions. At present also, there's a counter that Washington Post, along with others, run. And in, if you just go through the list to the key positions within the Department of State that remain without even nominees there, there's an entire list of people. Most interestingly, say the Chinese, the American ambassador to China resigned and left in October, early October. And he was not replaced leading up to the elections. And even today, there is no US ambassador to China. And that's your most significant rival, and you don't have an ambassador over there. So I think some of those things we will start to see get adjusted, right? A more professional bureaucracy, because all of these guys whom Biden has nominated are career diplomats. They served, most of them served, particularly Anthony Blinken, he served in the Clinton administration. Jake Sullivan was Biden's former national security advisor when Biden was vice president. So some of these guys have sort of risen up the ranks of the U.S. diplomatic sort of core. And you will see them return to business as usual, at least in terms of the professional functioning of the bureaucracy, which itself will feed into hopefully far more structured diplomacy compared to the sort of maverick, mercurial style of Trump. I don't think you will see Joe Biden randomly fly down to North Korea or, you know, to Singapore to have a summit with Kim Jong-un. Those are the kind of things that you will not see. So that's the one sort of big structural difference in terms of how diplomacy is likely to be conducted. And also stylistically, I think you will see a far more calmer American diplomacy, unlike what you've seen under Trump.
All right. So we'll see a more calm, more professional, perhaps more competent administration, and also one that is fully staffed, right? What are those appointments that we've seen so far, Manoj? What do they mean for India? I'm not just talking about at the level of Secretary of State or National Security Advisor, but even, for example, the Undersecretaries of State in the State Department or some of the National Security Council appointees. Can we read something from this about the Biden administration's approach to India?
So I'll just tell you right now, currently there are in the State Department, there's position for the Assistant Secretary for South Asian Affairs. You know, at present, there's no nominee for this, which tells you a little bit of how challenging this is. And there are sort of other sort of departments for sort of Eurasian Affairs, East Asian Affairs, so on and so forth. And you'll have to sort of see who takes these jobs. And this is a process that's going to be taking place over a period of time. So that's another thing to keep in mind, right? I mean, even the guys that Biden has already nominated, they need Senate confirmations. With the fact that the Democrats have won control of the Senate again in Georgia now, tells you that these confirmations will happen much more smoothly than they otherwise would have. But again, it depends on the people that get into these positions and what their dispositions are. And those are things that we will get to know within time to come. From an Indian point of view, one of the things that people have been looking out for is whether we see a continuation of the Indo-Pacific policy. Nothing at the moment tells you that there is any change that's going to take place. And I mean, to be fair to Joe Biden, he himself, soon after taking sort of winning the election, and then in an interview with the New York Times, I think he spoke to Tom Friedman, he basically told him that he's not going to make any sudden changes, say, for example, with regard to tariffs on China or things like that. He wants to consult with partners and allies about, you know, building quote unquote leverage, because to him, this entire game is about leverage. So from an Indian point of view, I think some of the structural changes that happened in terms of our relationship with under Trump and previously under Obama were all sort of progressively positive. I mean, whether it was Obama or whether it was Trump, the relationship with India grew structurally deeper. You signed all those core foundational military agreements. You've created a deeper sense of partnership with India, that pivot away from, say, Pakistan, and looking at Pakistan from the point of view of security threats, terrorism, so on and so forth, and looking at China as a serious challenge. Both of which are also in line with Indian perspectives in the world. I think those sort of work. I think the challenge from an Indian point of view lies in how evangelical in some ways the Joe Biden administration will be with issues of values, you know, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, how do they react to some of these things. So those might pose some frictions and challenges. Yet, I think when you look around the world, even from Washington, D.C., I think if it's a far more interest-driven administration, which is what I presume this will be, and my sort of bet is that this is how they will approach the world rather than, you know, sort of the Bill Clinton era ideology when there was sort of the unipolar moment. Therefore, I don't think I foresee those great frictions on even human rights taking place. Will there be some cases? For example, if you remember when Obama visited India for the Republic Day event, there was a comment that he spoke about human rights and values and whatever, which got lots of play in the media. But I think that those are things that will get play in the media. Those are frictions that will remain. Yet there is a structural dynamic of the relationship moving closer will exist. Now, what are the contours within which that exists is something to be seen. Does the Indo-Pacific as a structure survive? You know, that's something to be seen, because Trump is gone, so is Shinzo Abe. So there is a change that's taken place among the people who were the architects in some ways of this policy. So I think we need to keep in mind how that plays out. But does that impinge on the structural dynamic? I don't necessarily think it will as much. Yet will India be a priority for the Biden administration? I'm skeptical that India will be a foreign policy priority. When I say that, what I mean is that I think the priority is predominantly domestic for Joe Biden. From an international policy, from a foreign policy perspective, I think the priority is traditional allies first. So the European Union, and then dealing with, of course, Russia and China. I think Biden also faces a very different Middle East or West Asia, whatever you prefer, than he did during Obama's tenure. Some of these guys who are currently in the administration, their sort of priorities laid out in the region, in the Middle East, are with regard to sort of the rapprochement with Iran, sort of, you know, which is something that Obama had begun. But under Trump, that entire policy has not just been reversed, but there's been a complete change, right? Today, you're seeing the Abraham Accords, which have sort of brought into the open the relationship between Israel, the UAE, Saudi Arabia. You've seen that rapprochement. And I think in anticipation of a change in Washington, you've seen the Gulf states reorient their approach to Qatar also. So I think they face a different West Asia than they had 4 years ago. They face a very different China than they had 4 years ago. They face an India which is also significantly different, but yet which is structurally important. And to me, they also face a Europe which is very, very different, because it is within this period of transition that the Europeans ended up going and signing an agreement with the Chinese on trade, or at least agreeing to an agreement on trade and investment. So I think they face a very different world. So therefore, my sense is that the priority is not necessarily deepening engagement with India, although deepening engagement with India remains part of the broader structural change that will take place.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I don't see India being a priority for this administration, especially in the first 2 years. You know, that's the period when, of course, Biden's probably going to focus not just on domestic issues, consolidation of the peace domestically, but also the traditional allies. And this is also where the people who are appointed matter, you know. So if Lloyd Austin is Secretary of Defense, he is going to look at the Middle East as a priority. I'm heartened by the appointment of William Burns as the CIA director. He's a veteran diplomat. He knows India. So I suspect that's something that, you know, might be more broadly good for us. But I just want to get back, Manoj, to the point you were making earlier about human rights concerns and the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. In 2019, Foreign Secretary S. Jaishankar refused to meet some U.S. lawmakers after some comments made by a U.S. lawmaker. You also had the Prime Minister attend an event along with Donald Trump in 2019. Are these going to be seen as problems in the future with the Biden administration, or, you know, are they just going to forget about it?
No, I do think that these are going to be issues of the future. I think these are going to be problems, and I think it is extremely important from an Indian point of view also to not be hypersensitive to some of these things. Look, some things are products of domestic politics, and I think we should understand as well as anybody else. And that's fine. Instead of taking offense, instead of sort of, doing some of those things, we should be far more open to whatever criticism. Yes, I do get that the preachiness sometimes gets to you. And it's not called for, and there is a space to sort of say, you know, enough is enough. But to me, some of this plays to the galleries on, you know, the domestic politics on both sides. This business of, you know, snubbing and being snubbed plays to domestic politics on both sides. And I think as long as the folks making decisions which are going to impact the structural nature of this relationship understand that, which I do think they do, it should be fine. From a media point of view, from a public discourse point of view, yes, these things have momentary blips and create sort of a flutter, but I don't think they sort of change the direction of the relationship from a structural threat perception point of view and looking forward point of view. So, I mean, if you look at what Jake Sullivan's been talking about, he talks about establishing new positions in the National Security Council on global health, democracy and human rights, and cyber and emerging technology. If you're talking about global health, and if you're looking at it from a national security point of view, particularly after the year that we've had and questions that have been raised about, you know, sort of dependencies and vulnerabilities of supply chain with regard to the overdependence on China, India is well placed to take advantage of such frameworks. And I think this is the kind of thing that we should be looking to talk to the Americans about, to try and build capacity within India to address national security concerns on both sides. And it also is good economics for us. Cyber and emerging technology, again, the sort of same application here. Again, this will require us to make certain trade-offs. The Indian government has repeatedly spoken about the idea of cyber sovereignty, data sovereignty, and these sorts of things. And I think we need to move beyond some of these conceptualizations. So the point that I'm making is that there is a lot of room for us to cooperate and us to develop closer links across certain sectors, which are also priority for the Americans under this administration, and they're also priorities for us. But both sides will need to do greater give and take and not be held hostage to sort of ideological constructs like data sovereignty and, you know, digital sovereignty, because those will cut in other areas, yes. But I think at the end of the day, the trade-off of having a deeper relationship is good and useful from an economic point of view, but also from a socio-political point of view, because you create open systems in both societies, which is again something that is a stated objective of both societies. While we may have differences in what we see as, human rights issues, but those are stated objectives. And I think my sense is that after the last 4 years, despite the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, you will find folks in administration far more empathetic, I'm hoping, to such challenges in other countries as well. And that's partly because they have to do a lot of internal rebuilding themselves, and they're seeing themselves the challenges that identity politics can pose. So I think I'm hoping that there will be less preaching and more actually working while you may have certain priorities with regard to democracy and human rights.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should, just to keep perspective, remember that even if things aren't always great between India and the US today, they're certainly much better than they were 20 years back. I mean, there's no comparison at all. One thing over here, Manoj, is, you talked about these opportunities for collaboration. And of course, we should pursue these. But eventually, these will probably have to be embedded in a new framework for broader economic cooperation and a sort of re-envisioning of what, multilateral trade deals are going to look like in the coming decade or two. Do you see this administration taking up trade and expansion of trade opportunities seriously, because we haven't seen Obama do that, certainly not Trump. Is there a political constituency in the United States that is amenable to this?
Yeah, see, that's the big challenge, right? I mean, so Trump may have gone, but Trumpism survives. I think the antipathy to foreign trade also cuts across both parties, but to varying degrees. So I think that that's going to be challenging. I don't think that you will be seeing the kind of tariff wars that we've seen. But when Biden says that, you know, I'm not going to be making any sudden moves, I don't think he's looking at immediately shifting. I don't see a radical shift in that approach. What you might see is that you might see much more multilateralism and pressure through WTO and other institutions to open up economies. And I think that will continue. Whether that was Trump or whether that's Biden, I think that will continue. It's just the style and in some ways the approach will also change, but the objective will remain fairly similar. Now, whether the US can go back to these big multilateral deals or plurilateral deals that it was looking at in the past, such as the TPP, that remains an open question, right? It's not going to be easy. It was not easy even in the 1990s under Clinton to get some of these agreements done. And it's not going to be easy today, particularly after what's happened in the last 5-6 years. So again, that's going to be a challenge. But I think what you're going to see is you're likely to see, again, the idea of bubbles, the idea of trust corridors and these things created. The US needs to compete on trade internationally. It's essentially been locked out of major trade agreements, particularly in Asia, which is, you know, the most vibrant part of the world at the moment. Europe's finding its own sort of deals with other parts of the world. And that in some ways is also, the European deal with China predates the Trump administration, the conversations on that. But the sort of hastiness to eventually conclude it, I think partly also has to do with the fact that the way the US negotiated its phase one deal with China, blocking out the Europeans and others, created the impetus to actually finalize your own sort of deals. So it's tricky. I don't think we're going to go back to the way the world used to be. But also I think that, we're going to see an America which is going to try and compete to actually shape the rules internationally. I don't know whether it has the credibility and the economic might to be able to do that the way it used to anymore. But we have to wait and see how they actually approach it.
All right. So one final question, Manoj, is it's about John Kerry. He's been appointed the U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Climate. Now, this, I think, probably reminds Indians a bit of when Richard Holbrooke was made a special representative to Pakistan and Afghanistan, and India kind of freaked out. What do you think this appointment means? Should we be worried?
So I think this is going to be really, really tricky, right? I mean, and I think this creates in some ways a different power center within the administration. And yes, it's, the idea is that it's climate change, but Kerry, from what I understand, John Kerry's staffers will reside sort of in the existing State Department climate offices. It'll also be a sort of something under the National Security Council where Kerry will have sort of access to reports in the structure. So he actually is plugged into the entire diplomatic architecture, which also allows him to influence. Now, climate change is a huge issue with which, particularly with the Chinese and say even with India, what sort of authority would Kerry have to cut deals, make agreements, and how would that impinge on the broader strategic picture that, say, folks in the State Department or the National Security Council will be working on? Those are the kinds of conflicts that we are likely to see going forward. So I think we have to see how obviously this plays out, but I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see, you know, how much of Biden's year does Kerry have, how his role on climate change will influence broader policy changes, with regard to other actors. So I think that's something that we'll have to go and see. But yeah, the threat that, at least in the American media that you keep reading about, the threat of Kerry running his own foreign policy at the side is also something that's, you know, can be a potential challenge, particularly with regard to these larger countries like China, not so much India, but largely China. But it can be also the case with India, given that, you know, there could be a different set of pressures from the US with regard to India and climate change. At the moment, what we know is that Biden has promised that he'll go back into the Paris Accord, which is fine, which is something that we've ratified, something that we've agreed with. But what comes thereafter is something that we need to see. And the fact that he can be a separate power center plugged into the entire nervous system of foreign policy and diplomacy will give him a different level of, will give him access and will give him different authority to be able to shape decisions. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, however it plays out, it's probably going to be interesting. I think if I were to summarize India's concerns, I think one would be that the US might, deprioritize other issues in exchange for cooperation with China on climate change, and that, that might not actually bring a lot of benefit to anyone. And secondly, of course, that India is also paranoid about climate change being used as a pressure point against it, especially in trade negotiations. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I will say that, priorities of these administrations are going to change. We happen to be living for better and probably mostly for worse in interesting times. And so we'll probably end up seeing surprises of all sorts in these next 4 years. And, priorities are going to change both for the US and for India. Anyway, thanks so much, Manoj. This has been an interesting talk, and we'll probably keep revisiting how the Biden administration is approaching India in the coming months. So thank you so much.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.